JTS. Yeah. Just in time sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is just a town sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die, it's where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Ryder, I'm Jason. ESPN, better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is just a time sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it.
This is just in time sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it,
he gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the NBA Championship edition of the Just in Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. I want to start off a lot of different ways I can start this off with. So obviously, we're going to get into Game 7. We're going to get into the Kevin Durant trade that any other day in NBA, you know, in the NBA calendar is probably the biggest news of the day. And it's still major news. We'll talk about that probably first. Well, second. Because first, I want to thank Tyrese Haliburton. I'm not an Indiana fan, as you guys know, who've been, you know, podcasting with this show. I am not an Indiana fan, right? I am a New Orleans Pelicans fan, and I'm a root for LeBron wherever LeBron goes, right? All right, so those of you who follow this pod know that. All right, so and I've said that openly, especially during basketball season. When those teams come up, I'm not unbiased. Like, I'm not gonna be the person that, like Stephen A. Smith. You know, I don't like LeBron. LeBron don't like me, but I cover him fairly. No, you don't. You're a Jordan fan. You're a Jordan fanboy. You don't like LeBron. Your coverage reflects that. It's okay. It's you know, the same as Nick Wright. Nick Wright is a LeBron fan. So Nick Wright covers LeBron in a rose-colored lens. It's okay. But Nick Wright's openly about how he's a LeBron fan. Skip Bayless is openly a Michael Jordan fan. He's openly anti-LeBron. So he covers, and he will sit behind conjecture as well, but, you know, if you watch Skip long enough, you know that Skip Bayless is not fair when it comes to Michael Jordan or LeBron. Some people are big enough to admit it. Only one side of the Jordan-LeBron thing seems to not be big enough to admit their bias. But, hey, people on the LeBron side of the argument, or, you know, in LeBron's camp, Kobe's fans, Kobe's GOAT fans will say the same thing, like, it's Kobe. I'm biased. Like, I don't care. What you say to me is Kobe. You know, like, and that to me showcases a level of maturity that some people don't have, right? But I tell you guys openly, when it comes to the Pelicans and LeBron, when it comes to the Patriots, when it comes to LSU, when it comes to the Yankees, I am not unbiased. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to try to accomplish everything I can. As far as being unbiased, I am not unbiased, right? However, in this series, I've been highly unbiased, and I want to give massive credit to Tyrese Haliburton. He went down. It's posted on my socials, of course, at JTime Sports for all your breaking news and social media. I don't even think I gave you guys the intro. You guys know my voice. It's Justin Jackson. Follow at JTime Sports on all of your favorite social medias for breaking news, updates, coverages, etc. But it's posted all over our socials, of course, the JTS socials. Haliburton's injury, right? And I didn't do the close-up. I just did the play. I could have gotten a close-up. I have the close-up. And I've done it before. Right, like I've done it on the Kevin Durant one. I think I did it on Tatum's. I don't remember, but I know I did it on KD's. As far as show the close-up and the close-up, the exact moment, the foot steps back and where it's supposed to stop just above the ground and you launch off your balls of your feet, that heel hits the floor, the calf shudders, the fall forward. They either look back like someone kicked you, a la Kevin Durant, or the crumble to the floor, a la Tyrese Halliburton. Because KD didn't, his heel didn't hit the floor. So KD was trying to really stop on those balls of those feet. The foot came down a little bit too far. He was able to take another step because he pushed off of it already, took another step. And then when that other foot tried to come, the foot drags and he falls like someone kicks him in the back of the leg. Halliburton's heel hit the floor. I mean, that the Achilles is totally separate from his heel. I mean, it hit the floor, right? So one of the worst as far as full blown Achilles tears I've ever seen. Because again, usually even think back to Kobe's heel never hit the floor. You think about Tatum's heel. I don't recall Tatum's heel hitting the floor. I'm trying to think of another one who had a torn Achilles, but I know KD. Dame, I don't recall Dame's heel hitting the floor, and they were still kind of able to take that next step and go down. I mean, Halliburton's heel touched the floor. His whole foot was on the floor, and he fell forward, and that was it. And he was, you know, it's painful. ESPN might have showed it 40,000 times, Halliburton hitting the ground, screaming no. And it was brutal to see. I mean, he had a magical run, and it's gonna be one of those runs where I say, you know, people talk about, I talk about Kobe, and I always say when it comes to Kobe Bryant, analytics will not do Kobe Bryant any favors. The more we get into numbers and the more we crunch it, he's going to be the Wilt Chamberlain of our generation. Not because people say, well, you had to be there, you had to see it, you had to know how dominant he was, and you had to hear from his constituents, oh no, Wilt was the one you couldn't guard, and Wilt was the one you couldn't see. He was built different, he ran faster, he jumped higher. Look at his numbers, right? And even you hear the stories like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like, man, nah, Wilt was an old man and was whooping us. Just because of how physically strong he was. And even though he couldn't run as much as he used to and jump as high as he used to, he was whooping us. Like, people, I mean, Wilt is a myth. As far as people go, you had to be there, right? And I say that with Kobe. Kobe's going to be that. Because the more you look at, oh, Kobe was really inefficient. Kobe shot the ball badly. We remember Kobe's a great player. But in clutch time, these are the numbers. You know what I'm saying? We remember these shots from Kobe. But then when it mattered, these are the numbers. And it's, you know, we paint this image of LeBron as unclutch, but LeBron is, by percentage, the better shooter in the clutch time. So on and so forth. So I think Kobe's going to be that player. And I think Halliburton's playoff run is going to be put in that light. You had to be there. I mean, the Indiana Pacers in general, you had to be there. The epic comebacks over and over and over again. Tyrese Halliburton hitting 5 game winners in the last 3 seconds. Or last 5 seconds or less. 5 seconds or less in the same playoff run. Insane. I mean, what he did, he hit shot after shot. I mean, in every series, he hit a shot. Like, it wasn't like, oh, he put 3 in the finals. He put 3 in the conference. Like, he hit, like, 2 against Cleveland. He hit 1 or 2 against New York. He hit the 1 in game 1 against Oklahoma City. Like, Halliburton kept hitting the shot repeatedly. And he had the calf strain. And, you know, people were wondering. He admitted it. The doctors told me a multi-week injury. The doctor said a multi-week injury, but it's the finals I'm going to play. People were asking me, what do you think Halliburton should do? I was honest. So it's the finals. You don't know if you're ever going to see this again. Ask Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant has never made it back to the finals. Ask Giannis. Giannis has never made, and Giannis didn't get injured, but Giannis has not been to the finals ever again. Trying to think of some other young guys or people in general who, you know, got that final appearance kind of early, and you're thinking like, man, they're gonna have another 10 years. They're surely gonna get back. Trying to think of even guys in history who got their early loss and they never, like Allen Iverson, got their early loss and never made it back. I want to say, well, Reggie Miller got there as an old man, but like Reggie Miller told and never got back, right? So you have some of these. Charles Barkley got there once and never made it back. Clyde Drexler got there once and never made it back. So you get some of these guys that told in their careers, right? And you don't know if you're ever gonna get back to the finals. The NBA is such a dynastic league. This is the most different champions they've had in the history of the NBA. Seven different champions in seven different years. And I say it was weirder than the 70s. And it is, because so many different champions. But the 70s are like the dark ages in the NBA. Like the Knicks won two. I think the Sonics got one in there. And it's like, you know, they just kept switching out champions or no dominant players. The Bucks got one. Lou Alcindor, Kareem's first championship is in there as well. But you just get, you know, that was kind of considered the dark ages in the NBA. It was just a space where, it was, like I said, it was the dark ages. You honestly, it was so weird in the 70s, and the NBA was down, the ratings, whatever. But and this year, I said the ratings are down, and it feels like the 70s all over again. But, you know, so just such a dynastic moment. You don't know if you're ever going to get back to Tyrese Halliburton. You got to go. And he went down in game, what, five? He played the rest of game five. He was fine. He had a good night in game six. He was hotter than fish grease in game seven. He had banged three bombs to really stress out the Oklahoma State defense. And he had did the pump fake on Shea. I'm about to blow right by him and get to the rim. And the Achilles went. And, yeah, one of the harder situations ever. With KD, it was shock. Like, you know, there's the viral famous video of Drake, you know, on the side and kind of rubbing KD's shoulders he walked by. And with Kobe, the air left the room. Right, like I remember the Kobe Bryant one, right? The air, didn't matter where you were, it didn't matter who you was with. The air kind of left the room. When he reached the back of that heel, you just knew, right? Tatum goes down. And it's sad. But it's, again, more of a shock value than a sadness. Because it wasn't like Kobe had no prior injury. Tatum had no prior injury. With KD, once he came back, that was the first one we really started watching the calf pull or calf strain to Achilles track. And that was the first one, right? And so he goes down, right? And again, that was more of a shock thing because Kevin Durant never had been, KD had never been injured. So there was no point where you looking like, man, KD, you know, whatever. With this one with Halliburton, it was just sad. I don't think Tatum's going to play next year at all. He went down in what, May? 12 months puts you at May. And Achilles to me is a 12-month injury. It's 24-month injury. 12 for healing, another 12 to kind of not think about it no more. Because now KD is different. KD the first year back was, you know, an all-star NBA level player. But most of the time it's 24 month, 12 to 18 month situation. 12 months to heal and rehab it. 6 to 12 months to really trust it and not think about it no more. We think about Halliburton. If Halliburton does 12 months, that's middle of June. You see what I'm saying? Like the Pacers would have to make it to the finals without him, and then he had to play in, like, right? And then so he'd have another 3 months for the 26-27 season starts. Or that'd be 25-26? No, 26-27 season would start. In which case, he probably misses until around Christmas. Or he's not really himself until around Christmas. For Tatum, again, he popped it in May. Same with Dame. Dame pops in late April, early May. So the 12-month cycle comes back in the playoffs. If I'm the team, I don't bring you back in the playoffs. You wait until the next season. So crushing for the Pacers. Crushing for Halliburton. So he was having one of the crazier playoff runs as far as game one is in NBA history. He was having a game to start off with. He had nailed three bomb threes. I mean, he was having a moment, and the Achilles goes. But congratulations are in order. The Oklahoma City Thunder have won the NBA title. We spoke about how Oklahoma City, in hindsight, looking back through the course of history. Now, I have my personal rule, and I want to speak on Phil Jackson's personal rule as well. So, Phil Jackson's is kind of easier. Phil Jackson stated the 40-20 rule was his rule in the NBA. in order to be a title contender, you need to win 40 games before you lose 20. Since the merger, there's only been like seven exceptions. I think Indiana would have been the eighth. Indiana would have been the eighth exception, but there's only been like seven exceptions to the rule. You got to win 40 before you lose 20. And Oklahoma City checks out that box. Oklahoma City didn't lose 20 all season. They were 68 and 14 in the regular season. They didn't lose one in the first round. They lose three in the second round. Oh, okay, they barely lost 21. They lost 21 games all season and won 84. So they played 105 games and they were 84 and 21. Right, one of the more ridiculous regular seasons, one of the most ridiculous win seasons of all time. That is up there with, so of course, 72 and 10 Bulls ended with 88. So the 72-10 Bulls ended with 88. The Thunder ended with 84. But actually, I don't know if the Bulls got 88 because I think that was still first round best of five. So they might end with 86 or 87. And then the 73-9 Warriors were one win away. So they also end with 88 wins. Oklahoma City ends with 84 wins. So they're right up there with some of the greatest teams of all time. And you think about it, in order to beat Oklahoma City's win total, you have to go 69 wins plus the title. Like in modern history. With the 4-4-4-4, with the 7-7-7-7 at the best of seven. 72-10 Bulls is probably the only team, because again, the Warriors lost their, so the Warriors have more wins, but they lost their title. So 72-10 Bulls, the 73-9 Warriors, maybe a Spurs team in there has 60 something. Cause even like those great Cavs teams, I say great, the LeBron was carrying, they were winning like 66. Those Heat teams were winning like 58. So it was like, you know, like, those teams weren't getting it. So the Thunder, I'm going to say right now, have the third most wins in NBA history in a season. 84 wins. 84 and, you know, what is it, 21? Insane, absolutely ridiculous record. Congratulations. But anyway, back to what I was saying originally. Got sidetracked in my own brain. Phil Jackson had the 40-20 rule where you, in order to be a great team, in order to win a title, you typically have to win 40 games before you lose 20. That's how I got sidetracked. That's how the count I'm in the game Thunder won. OKC checked that box off. Indiana didn't. Indiana started so slow, and I spoke about that probably a month ago when I said Indiana was a weird situation because they kicked it in the second half. And a lot of people forgot about Indiana. Indiana went to the conference finals last season. We made it to the NBA finals this season. People ruled them out of the East because they started off so bad. Them, Milwaukee, and Philly started off so bad that they kind of all got ruled out of the East. Of course, Philly kept tanking. Milwaukee ends up, you know, Giannis will carry them to the finals, but Dame goes down and carries to the playoffs. But then Dame goes down and they're out. And then Indiana kept their hot streak going. Indiana makes it into the NBA Finals, right? That was actually a good team. But Indiana didn't check the box. Now, and it's only been like seven exceptions since the merger. So the merger was in 70-something. 76, I want to say, was the merger between the ABA and the NBA. So basically over 50 years of history, there's been 43 out of 50. That's what, 86% success rate on Phil Jackson's 40-20 rule. So when the loss column gets full, somebody hits 20 losses, they got to have 40 wins to win the title at an 86% clip. My personal rule is the player rule. You either have the best player in the world, you have two of the top 12, I said 10, but really 12-ish, or three of the top 25. That has been the case every year of NBA history. And I always do since Magic, because I don't know a lot about the dynamics of the NBA prior to Magic. I know who won. Like, I can go through and tell you who won the title, but I can't really tell you prior, since Magic Johnson, this rule has hit every single year except for probably except for the 04 Pistons. And that's probably it. You know, Dirk had the crazy run. Like, you could have made the case for Dirk being the best player in the world after that run. You beat Kobe Bryant in 5. You beat the big three Heatles in 6. And you beat the baby Thunder in 5. Like, I got to give you credit. You're probably the best player in the world after that. Even if it's just right at that moment, I give you credit. But the Mavs might be the only team that doesn't have that. You could have made an argument for Kawhi with the Raptors. That was a weird one because of the injuries. But you could have made an argument for Kawhi with the Raptors being the best player in the world at that moment. Steph's 4th ring. There's a case, in my opinion, for Steph to have best player in the world credit. I disagree. But you can make the case. But let's say at most, since 79, there's 3, maybe 4 exceptions. For Phil Jackson's rule, from 76-ish, there's 7 exceptions. So all in all, these two rules are very, very valid. Well, 2 things that this rule, and they meet in the middle, they meet on Oklahoma City. Instead of Indiana, it would have been a weird playoffs. Like, Indiana doesn't win. I'm sorry, you don't have the talent. Like, that team, that player doesn't win. However, in a situation like Oklahoma City, you can make an argument that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the best player on planet Earth. Plain and simple. You can say right now, and I won't argue with you, again, very similar to Dirk. Where if you make the argument for Dirk after 2011, Dirk is the best player of all, the best player currently walking the planet Earth. Who am I to say? Everybody else would have claimed he beat. KD had a claim, he beat him. Kobe had a claim, he beat him. LeBron had a claim, he beat him. Shai beat Jokic. Jokic is my number one, but Shai beat Jokic. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander completed one of the most impressive finals, well, one of the most impressive seasons for any player in NBA history. And at first I said, you know, one of the most seasons for a guard, but no, it's anybody. He wins the NBA MVP. So let's start off with the individual. He's first team all NBA. He's an all-star. He's scoring champion. Then he goes to the playoffs and he wins MVP the regular season, conference MVP, NBA finals MVP, and he wins the ring. He also wins 68 games. He is an all-star starter. He had the most 50, 40, and 30-point games. He was first in the league in plus-minus, and he was second in steals. He also joins Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, one of the top 3 players of all time, Michael Jordan, one of the top 3 players of all time, and Shaquille O'Neal, one of the top 10 players of all time. And he becomes the 4th player ever to win the scoring champion, the regular season MVP, and the finals MVP in the same season. I mean, this was simply one of the greatest seasons by a player ever. You know what I'm saying? If you want to make the SGA's the best player in the world conversation, I'm not going to fight you. A lot of old head NBA players are ready to put it on SGA, such as Shaq. Shaq has mentioned, like, if SGA wins his league, he's the best player, he's the face of it, whatever. I'm not going to fight you on that, right? And I think, you know, to me, J-Dub is top 12. And I gave that argument a couple weeks ago, like in regards to the All-NBA, the All-Defense, and then he just had a 40-point explosion in the finals. I think J-Dub is top 12-ish. So to me, that would check out the box even better if he is hard up for Jokic. Like, yo, Jokic is the guy. I would still say Jokic is the best player in the world, but if you want to make the SGA argument, I'm not going to fight you, which means that Oklahoma City would check the box and join the litany of other people, besides 3 to 4 exceptions, that check the box of how I think you got to win the title, either the best player, 2 of the top 12, or 3 of the top 25. I think that is major as far as how you win the title. I do want to make one more point. Oh, we didn't go through the game stats. I know you guys love when I go through the stats. We didn't go through the game stats, and I'll make my last point on the game before I shift to Kevin Durant and what happened with him. So, box score, Pascal Siakam, 16 points on 5 of 13. Andrew Nembhard, 15 points on 4 of 10. Miles Turner, only 4 shots. Halliburton, like I said, 9 points on 3 of 4 in just 7 minutes. Obi Toppin, 21 minutes, nothing. No points, 0 for 4. TJ McConnell played 28 minutes, filling a lot of that backup point guard. He goes for 16 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists on 8 for 13. Benedict Mathurin goes for 24 and 13 on 6 of 14. That's pretty much all the bench points. You get 2 from TJ Bradley, who barely played before that. But you get 0 out of Ben Shepherd for 16 minutes. You get 0 out of Obi Toppin for 21 minutes. I'm not going to count Finley, Bryant, or Jackson, because that was most definitely just sub-in guys. You know, that was definitely just a clearly bench situation. But on the Thunder side, you get 18-8 out of Chet on 6 of 8 shooting. 24-4 on 7 of 20 from J-Dub. Shea gives you 29-5-12 on 8 for 27. He had a bad night from the offense. I mean, that's less than 25%. That's an awful shooting night. Good God. That's like 30%. And speaking of 30%, Lou Dort goes 9-7 on 3 of 10. Alex Caruso gives you 10 on 4 of 10. Andrew Wiggins gave you nothing in 12 minutes. Cason Wallace gave you 10 in 26 minutes. I do think I'm going to run through the team stats really quickly. Both teams shot bad. Indiana 41%, OKC 40%. OKC had 17 more shots at the basket. They both made 11 threes. OKC made their 11 threes on 12 more shot attempts, however. Both teams made 22 free throws. Rebounds basically the same. Indiana with 45, OKC with 40. The big number in this game finally was turnovers. So remember how in game one, Indiana survived the turnovers. It was like 20 something to 8 or something like that in turnovers. It was a massive number, a very small number, but the points off turnovers were on like 11-7. Oklahoma City wins this game by 12. They win points off turnovers by 22. That's your ball game. Turnovers was 23-8. Oklahoma City scored 32 points off 23 turnovers. That is your game. That is your ball game. It is everything else is and points in the paint. Oklahoma City wins by 14. Everything else is basically virtually identical. It may even lean to Indiana. But there is a glaring difference in this. It is a 22-point difference in points in the paint. But what I will notice is, just looking at some of the stats quickly, this was shaping up to be a classic knockdown, drag-out game 7. Neither team was shooting the ball well. We all thought gave Indiana a chance. And I put that in a group mess. I was talking to some guys, and I was saying, man, NBA Finals game 7s don't typically break 100. You know, they're usually knockdown, drag-out. You know, you've been seeing the same team for 2 weeks. You're tired. You're nervous. Like Rich Jefferson was saying at the beginning of the game, he said, at this point, your heart's just pounding. Your heart's just going. He said, and the big thing about it is you're trying to get to a point where you get so tired, you got to get a second win, and that second win calms you down. Or you're trying to make it to that first time out, and you sit down and breathe. It's like, okay, it's a basketball game. Like, he said, because Rich Jefferson was in the last Finals game 7 in 2016. He's like, your heart's just pounding. It's just going because every second that ticks off, it's closer to somebody being named a champion. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the whole season has come down to this. You know, that was Oklahoma City's 105th game. That was Indiana's probably similar. They might be at 109, 108, 109. Like, you've played over 100 games. You've been playing since October. It's mid-June. And you are, you know, you're in the last game. You're in the last possible game of the season. 30 teams play 82. You know, 16 teams made the playoffs. Like, all through this war. And somebody is going to walk out this floor a champion for life. Like, and so this is a different feeling. And, you know, obviously Halliburton going down, to me, it's the air out of the game. It's signed, sealed, and delivered this game to Oklahoma City. But I will say that Indiana had a great season. Oklahoma City was just the best team all year. They had the number one record. They had the best playoff record. They had the highest playoff percentage. They had the MVP. You know what I'm saying? They were just the best player. And the crazy part of Oklahoma City is they are set up for success. They are set up for crazy success, like insane success. Like I haven't, Sam Presti has been with Oklahoma City the entire, he's been the GM of the Oklahoma City Thunder the entire time they've been in Oklahoma City. He was the, they carried him over from the Supersonics when they were in Seattle. He's been the GM the entire time. He's built two teams. Like he's built two legitimate teams. He built the Big Three Thunder, the Baby Thunder, KD, Harden, and Westbrook. That disbands. He does the Paul George thing. He does the Carmelo thing. But the wild part about those moves is he's always acquired picks back or young assets and continued to do it. And then this time, when he moved Paul George and Russ Love, he basically tore it down to the brass tacks. One of those tacks was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, courtesy of the Paul George trade. So, looking, forecasting the Thunder's picks, first round picks until 2030. I mean, because I'm gonna go through 2027 because it kind of matches the contract part. So through 2027, they have the rights to two firsts in 2025. They have the rights to three firsts in 2026, and they have the right to two firsts in 2027. Then along with that, they have a second round in 2025, a second in 2026, and two in 2027. Through contract and through 2027, so for the next 2 years, SGA, Hardenstein, Lou Dort, Alex Caruso, Aaron Wiggins, Kenrick Williams, Cason Wallace, Nikola Topic, Dylan Jones, Isaiah Joe, with Chet Holmgren and J-Dub being extension eligible. And it's another player on the team, too, that can get an extension. They are set up for a dynastic run we haven't seen since the Warriors in terms of this whole team comes back. Boston is not a factor next year. They're just not. Tatum probably not going to play next year. So Boston's out. Indiana's out because, again, Tyrese Halliburton's probably not going to play that year. Milwaukee's out. Dame Lillard's probably not going to play next year. So that's three teams that made the playoffs, including one that made the finals that are out. I wonder what the Lakers are going to do in terms of they can get a big. New Orleans is probably one or two pieces away. Memphis is tearing it down now, so they're probably out. Like, you know, so you're just looking at these teams. It looks like Oklahoma City is going to go right back to the finals next season. Like I said, they're going to have a chance to be a mini Warriors where they can win two out of four, three out of six. You know, just kind of because the team is so young. That they average like 24 years of age. They're so young. They have final experience now. They've made that long journey. It would not shock me if they win, not even counting this one, two of the next three. And this is where they win three and four. You know, they go back-to-back, lose one, and then get another one, lose and get another one. Like, get like three and five or something like that. And be a dynasty of their own. Oklahoma City has set up very nice. Sam Presti is incredibly smart. And he's also had the ability of, he knows he has to start trading these picks at some point. You can't just keep drafting these players. Otherwise, you have the greatest G League team ever. I think he's going to package those picks for something. I don't know what that something is. I don't know if that's a Giannis. I don't know if that's a Karl Anthony Towns. I don't know if that is, you know, whoever. I think he's going to end up packaging those picks for something. Just not quite sure what it is yet. But shout out Sam Presti for building this Oklahoma City team. Shout out Mark Dagenault, head coach of the Thunder as well. He got some heat during his series for decisions he made. Ultimately, you know, they end up winning. They end up winning probably because of some decisions he made. So, you know, great job, Mark Dagenault. And just congrats to the whole state of Oklahoma City, man. Like, you weren't a pro sports town. Hell, you weren't a sports town until 17, 18 years ago. Like, University of Oklahoma's in Norman. Oklahoma State's in Stillwater. Like, even the major colleges wasn't in Oklahoma City. And so the fact that in 2008, you pick up the Thunder, an NBA franchise. Well, you pick up the Sonic that become the Thunder. You get that finals run with the Baby Thunder of KD, Harden, and Westbrook. And then now you get an NBA title in a parade. So kudos to the state of Oklahoma as well. But the big news today that dropped, and we're going to spend a ton of time on it. I'm sure we'll cover it more during the offseason acquisition part. But the big news that dropped today was Kevin Durant traded to the Houston Rockets in exchange for Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the 10th overall pick in this year's NBA draft, and 5 second round picks. I mean, we hadn't seen the 5 second round picks this offseason. Remember, they were real popular a couple years ago. Maybe it would have been last year, but people were packaging 5 second round picks with like everything. I don't know why that became the number, but it was. Anyway, KD was traded ultimately to the Rockets, which is one of his teams, his preferred list. It was Houston and a couple other places, but Houston was, many people connected him with Houston. Now, what assets Houston got back was the shocking part. You didn't get back the Suns pick. The Suns didn't get back their pick. They also didn't get back Jabari Smith. Or they didn't get back Amen Thompson. Like, they didn't get back any of the young stars. Dylan Brooks is a menace. He's annoying, but he's not really a young star. Jalen Green, I speak about the G League. First of all, it was rumored that Jalen Green was going to get redirected. But I speak about the G League guys all the time. They're kind of the same player. They jump really, really high. They have moderately decent handles. They do everything on raw athleticism, but then they can't shoot a basketball. And it's kind of like the G League. That's how they play in the G League. They play open, fly across. We're gonna, everything's in the air, so on and so forth. And we're not really hardlining you. We're kind of letting you make mistakes. So that's how they play in the NBA. Jalen Green takes awful shots. Jalen Green can't really shoot. He jumps really high. He has a pretty decent handle. He's a solid defender because of how athletic he is. I mean, that's just the honest truth. And then, of course, the other part of that trade, the other player in that trade is Dylan Brooks, who, you know, I don't see Dylan Brooks being a Sun. It doesn't help Dylan Brooks with how he wants to. Like, the Suns don't benefit from Dylan Brooks. Right? Like, Dylan Brooks is a guy that is going to be a defender. An annoying, it's gonna be a nuisance. He's gonna be a guy that helps and protects that star player. He's also gonna be a guy that could be that cog piece in that title team. And Phoenix is not there on any of those fronts, right? So I don't see the Dylan Brooks piece. The number 10 overall pick in this draft, who cares? And the 5 second round picks, definitely who cares, right? But what does this mean for Phoenix? For Phoenix, it means that you are looking at Jalen Green as part of your future. And I say that you're looking at Jalen Green as part of your future because they're not immediately moving him. Plus, he's hard to do anyway with that poison pill contract. Because it's on his rookie extension, and his contract is poison pilled. So while the physical dollar amount says $12 million, he counts for his new team like 37, but he only counts for his old team like 12. So you can only get back like $12 to $14 million for a $37 million deal. Like, it's a lot of chicanery and a lot of maneuvering that Jalen Green's contract is going to take, as long as it still counts as a poison pill. Because I can't really aggregate the contract. But it means that you consider Jalen Green part of your future. You want to give Book some more firepower. You want to kind of bring that age down a little bit. You go with Jalen Green. For Houston, it means you're trying to win a title. Plain and simple. Kevin Durant's numbers were better than Jalen Green, but not demonstrably. And if you add his numbers to Dylan Brooks' numbers, they weren't better. What you were doing in Houston is you're protecting your future. You kept Amen Thompson. You kept Jabari Smith. You kept Tari Eason. You kept Amparoon Sangoon, right? You kept a lot of these young, talented players. So you protect your future. But you also get a guy, KD, where when that ball gets stuck, it's been 2 minutes and it's been 4 bad shots. That ball goes to KD in the mid post. And he goes. And it's like, it's a bucket to lay up, and he kind of breaks that funk. Or tight playoff game, 4 minutes left. Instead of that ball being in Jalen Green's hand, that ball's in Kevin Durant's hands. And you live and die with KD. I think this is a great opportunity for KD. I think it's a chance for him to really just go there and hoop. You know, it's like what he wants to do. He knows how he wants to operate. I think it's a good opportunity for him to do that. Houston's a big enough city where he can find himself into something, but he ain't the only superstar in the town either. Like, Houston has baseball. Houston has CJ Stroud of the Texans. Houston has MLS. Houston, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Houston had University of Houston. Like, Houston has all these different things that are, you know, kind of fit Kevin Durant's world, but he's not the main only thing popping in town. He can kind of move a little bit better. Kind of a good thing for KD, the fact that he's not in a place like Minnesota where everything lives and breathes and dies off the Timberwolves. He's not in a place like San Antonio where everything lives, breathes, and dies off the Spurs. He gets to Houston where things matter, but their culture, led by Ime Udoka, who Kevin Durant absolutely loves, driven by him, they're going to be able to not busy. I mean, they're not the only thing in town, so they're able to maneuver. It's a little bit better. KD's 7 feet tall. It's hard for him to do it anyway, but it's comforting for him knowing that. But congratulations to Houston, man. Like, that's a huge move. That's a championship statement kind of move for, like, we're going for it, right? Because again, for 4 minutes, having Jalen Green over Kevin Durant's a coin flip. Having KVD over Jalen Green, coin flip. Them last 4 minutes. Or that 2.5 minutes scoring drought, that's when Kevin Durant's going to make his money. It won't be every single play and every single, you know, game and every single, you know, defender can't guard me. It's going to be very strategic when KD matters over Jalen Green. Like, that's those heavy moments is when KD's going to matter over Jalen Green. I was telling some guys, I kind of last point on this. I was telling some guys today when the news broke and they were arguing over, man, I'd rather have Jalen Green at this point in his career. Man, you gave up a lot for Kevin Durant. Like, what's going to happen 2-3 years from now? It doesn't matter to Houston. They're trying to win a championship. If you win a championship and then go in the doldrums, no one cares you won a title. Right, like, Detroit's been living off the 04 title for years. Boston was title bean town, title town, and like off the 08 title. Like, you win a title, it gives you room to restart it, if that makes sense, right? And so I think that because they're going to have that built-in leverage, like I say, if they win the title, you're basically changing, presto change-o. And similar to what Golden State did with KD, although KD came in and took over the situation and won Finals MVP, etc. But you're basically, in Golden State in 2016, you were presto change-o-ing Kevin Durant, Harrison Barnes, and the Kevin Durant. Houston effectively is presto change owing Jalen Green into KD. So at the end of the game, when, you know, palms get sweaty, backsides get tight, instead of swinging that ball to Fred Van Vliet, Sengun in the post, or Jalen Green because he's made, you know, 4 of his last 6, and you're hoping that this ain't the bad one, you throw it to Kevin Durant, you live with the results. So I think that's going to be huge for Houston. Ime Udoka is going to have that roster playing well. You know him. He's going to have those guys rolling. But that is all I have for today. Again, humongous congratulations to the Indiana Pacers for a great season. But the top of the, I mean, you're NBA champion. Congratulations to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, J-Dub, Mark Dagenault, Sam Presti, and the rest of the Oklahoma City's organization. Those guys, I mean, they're models as far as how to build through the draft, how to make smart trades. Patience is key, so on and so forth. Now, they're set up for the next 5-6 years of just runway. Until they seem average age hit like 30, they are set up for just, you know, a half a decade run where they pick up 3 to 4 more titles in 6-7 years. It's just, they are set up really, really well. Huge credit to Sam Presti for that. Like I said, Mark Dagenault, the coach, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, J-Dub, main two players. And just congratulations to the city of Oklahoma as well. Oklahoma City, rather. But that is all I have for you guys today. This is your owner and host, Justin Jackson, signing out.